Daydreaming About Dragons, episode 96. And I just ran a game this past Friday of Apocalypse World Burned Over. If you don't know what that is, I will have a link in the show notes. And it is basically the latest edition from the Bakers of Apocalypse World, the game that spawned a lot of games. I would even, a mini industry, PBTA is a whole thing. And if you haven't looked at the original, I think it's well worth looking at. I think the playbook design is top of the line. I can name a couple games that I think are better or as good on that level. Not better. I think there are a couple of games that have playbooks that are on the level of Apocalypse World. And I think there are about three. I bet I have friends who could argue for four or five, but that would be a cool argument / discussion to have. I'm going to have to bring it up and talk to some friends about it. But what I think about, which games are on that level doesn't really matter right now. I want to talk about, not only are the playbooks really top notch, but the way it structures prep is really, really interesting. And it prompts you to make up threats in your world. And if you came at PBTA World through Dungeon World, then you'll remember fronts, and fronts and threats are pretty much synonymous. And what I love about the prep in Apocalypse World, particularly in Burned Over, I think it's gotten a little bit tighter and even better than it was. And it was really great to begin with. Same with the playbooks. It's just getting better. And I didn't think it could. Are the use of questions. And I know I talk about questions a lot. I know I talk about asking players questions. And I'm coming to this conclusion that I think I like settings that have more questions than answers. And that doesn't mean there are no answers. It does not mean that there's nothing evocative there. It means I need a couple of sentences of evocative stuff and then a couple good questions. And I would love to dig into my Apocalypse World prep and just talk about it on air, but I can't because Jay and Aaron are playing in that game. And so maybe eventually I'll talk about it down the line once that game is over. But for now, I am not going to do that. What I will do is I'm gonna dig into the six fantasy cities I have, and I'm going to talk about how I would make questions for each of them. All right, so let's get to it. So why do I like questions in settings? Because it means that there are things for you as the GM, MC, DM, whatever, to wonder about. You're not sure what exactly is going to happen. You've rolled a bunch of boulders up to a cliffside, and now you don't know which way they're going to fall or if they're going to fall. And so you're kind of watching the players, and you're interested in what they're going to do because they might alter it one way or the other, right? And that is what I like about it, is it prompts you to shove things at the players, not in a way that says, hey, I want you to go here, but hey, are you going to poke at this? Because I'm curious to see what you're going to do with the world. I'm curious to see what the world is going to look like after you're done walking in it. Because your footprints in the sands are going to create a reaction. Something is going to happen. And the questions might not get answered. Not everything, not every detail gets dealt with. But some do. And I am curious, very curious about how that'll work. So let's jump into a couple of cities and see what kind of things I would do. If I was running these six cities as a D&D campaign tomorrow, what would I do? What would be the questions I'd be asking about these places? So the first city is called Asmodean, a former capital of the Devilfolk Empire, back when there was an empire, made to honor the god tyrant Asmodeus, but was never officially recognized as his unholy capital city. The city is guarded by 13 altar fortresses, each commanded by a warlock commander. Okay, So what would I want to know about those, this place? And of course, you can see devil folk are tieflings, right? You get that idea? Okay, good. I wanted to use my own word for it, and I'm not sure why. So they're basically tieflings, and I've got two questions about this setting. Will the devil's son's coup take over the city? And then I've got, what organization will benefit from the upcoming Cold War with the Dragonborn? So I love putting tieflings and Dragonborns at war together because, number one, I think it's fun. I think devils versus dragons is a fun conflict. Numero dos is because people say, oh, the tiefling and the dragonborn just aren't as evocative as dwarves and elves. And that's hogwash. That is hogwash. So I like putting them at odds. Cool. What is the devil's son's coup? Hey, maybe you don't even know. Maybe you're finding out. But I don't think so, right? I think maybe you know. I think devil's sons are probably tieflings with a very direct and very recent line and lineage to hell, right? One of their parents directly was a summonable demon. Whereas other tieflings, maybe you have to go back a couple of generations to get that close to hell. And so they are kind of a you know, religious orthodox group that wants to bring Asmodean back towards a more hellish time and you know, bring them closer to the devils that are at their foundation. You know, are they going to succeed? I don't know. You know, is the coup even going to go off? I don't know. Are the players going to get involved? I don't know. I don't care. What organization will benefit from the upcoming Cold War of the Dragonborn? I don't even know what organizations there are, but I'm watching out now, right? These questions have me watching out, and they've got me thinking about what factions are going on in that city. And there might not be any, but I've got a place to start. Things are in motion. What these questions do is they set things in motion as I'm thinking about them and trying to answer them. Okay, next city is called Bahamudad, and it is my dragon folk city, dragonborn, if you will. The holy city of the dragonborn, where it is said that Bahamut and Tiamat's high priests and priestesses made a peace accord and gathered to create the species after the first dragon war. The exports are lumber, ancient coins, and accountants. So I've got some questions about this. So in my thoughts, the dragonborn and the tieflings, the dragon folk and the devil folk, which were recently at war, right? So that's coloring a lot of things. And I think Bahamudad is on tough times after the war. I think the war cost them dearly. And so they're running into a little bit of an economic problem. So here are my two questions. Will the city survive its upcoming taxation of local dragons? What? Who's going to collect that? I just think that's fun. Taxing dragons, fun. And then I've got, will the kobold strike earn them better working conditions? I love kobolds. I love them. I adore them. And I like the idea of them in a dragonborn city, a dragon folk city. Kobolds, you know, they're like little dragon dog people. So I think they belong there and they are just so cool. And, you know, they dig pit traps. They're laborers. They are probably not treated great by the dragonborn in general. And so, yeah, I love the idea of them striking, especially now that the war's over. You know, they were patriots, man. They fought in that war. They set pit traps for the enemy. But now that the war's over, they want some equal pay. They were promised. So will the kobold strike earn them better working conditions? And I just love the idea that the possibility that the players could get involved in a kobold strike. I think it's awesome. I hope that isn't taken as me thinking that union folk workers and laborers and you know, blue collar workers are like kobolds. You know, that's not what it is. It's that I adore kobolds and I want to see them, you know, do better and get treated better. And so I think I think it's awesome that they're striking, and I would be, you know, I'd be rooting for them in my own little side way, in the same way that I'd be like, well, we'll see what happens. Well, you know, these are questions. I don't know what's going to happen, and that's kind of fun. So those are my questions for Brahmadad. What else we got? So I hope it's becoming clear that these questions put the world into motion, right? And you don't know where it's going to go. We're playing to find out. We're keeping the story feral. And I love that. I think that is really fun. Let's do one more. We're not going to do all six. We don't need to do all six. We'll do one more. This is the last one. Pentacle is a new and growing metropolis made by a cabal of five mages who have built a merchant house from their money that they earned in quotes, maybe italics, from stolen dragon's hordes and looted lich's tombs, surrounded by five towers that are still under construction and stout walls that were put up by magic. Cool. So Pentacle, I think, brings up a couple of interesting questions, right? How will the Pentacle City Council react to one of their number becoming a lich? Ooh, I think that's fun. That's interesting, right? One of their number went to the dark side. What now? Are they a person anymore? I think the laws are going to be really interesting in a wizard city. And if I've got a wizard in the party, you know, were they trained in Pentacle? Was the person who taught them trained in Pentacle? I think it brings up some interesting questions. So that is fun. Good stuff. And then I've got another labor dispute. I'm sorry. But will the Wizards Apprentices successfully organize into a union? You know, it's an important question. And you know, a really savvy player would see these two things going on and introduce the Wizards Apprentice to the kobold laborers. And then things would get really interesting, right? Yeah, then things would get real. Then things would get really real. We get some real Marxist fantasy going up in here. So I like these things because I get to pick out what's interesting to me about the city. It does not say anything about what the players do. It's just background. And the players might jump on it and be like, hey, we need to get involved in this conflict. But they might not. They might just say, hey, we're going to let that go and do its thing. You know, we don't have to get involved in every conflict. And how am I using this stuff? I am about to start running for my Thursday night game. I'm about to start running Journeys into the Radiant Citadel. And if you hear some movement, it's because I'm moving the book and looking at the cover and marveling at it. So I'm definitely going to go into the different worlds of Radiant Citadel and think about some questions I want to see, you know, I want answered, because I want things to be moving in the setting. And I want that sense of something deeper. And the players don't have to get involved in it. It doesn't matter. Maybe they hear about it in the background. Maybe they hear bards, you know, singing the news. And that's fine. So that's what I got going on. That's what I'm thinking about. Settings and questions. Questions are just good. And you know what? We're linking this back to real life for just a second. Every social situation in my life where I have a regret. This is going to get real. Here we go. Ready? Here has how good questions are, I think, as just a thing in life. Every situation where I have a regret in my life from a social interaction, it would not have been a regret if I had asked a good question in that moment. If I had stopped, taken a deep breath, not gotten angry, not gotten flustered, not gotten frustrated, and just asked a really pointed question, it would have been better. And yeah. Questions. It's just good stuff. It's good for getting things out of the players. It's good for finding out what's going on with the characters. And it's good for your settings too. I'd love to hear about what's going on with questions in your settings. What questions do you have for different areas of your settings? Can you send me some? In the outro, I'll have my email. I'd love to hear from you. All right? I'll talk to you soon. Let's get to the Inspiration Goat. Before we get to Inspiration Goat, I would just like to point out there is a link at the top of the show notes in which you can find my GM profile at startplaying.com. And you can, as another way to support the show is to pay me to GM for you. If you have a friend who you haven't gamed with in a long time and they're far away, it could be a cool holiday gift to say, hey, I bought a session with a GM whose podcast I like, and we're going to play together. A GM and two players is one of my favorite things in the world. So think about that for a gift. It could be fun. And check it out. Check out the link, and maybe we'll get the game together. If pay to play is something that does not vex you, let's do it. And your money situation allows for it, of course. And with that, let's get to the Inspiration Goat. Good one. This is a book that I've read. It's also a TV show that I have not seen yet. It's on Apple TV. It is called Slow Horses by Mick Herron. It is a spy thriller about the washed up MI5 spies. And it is really charming and fun and really cool. I'm not going to go deep into it. If you haven't read it, that's fine, because what I'm going to do now is talk about what can we grab from Slow Horses and bring over into our gaming table. What is there to learn? What is there to take? And I think what you can take from Slow Horses by Mick Herron is a love of the underdog. Let's talk about the premise of the book just a touch. Slough House is a place where they put MI5 agents who have messed up really terribly, and they don't want to fire them, so they stick them in a place where their career will languish and die forever. And it's about these MI5 agents stumbling, sometimes through good work, sometimes through luck, into, you know, situations that they have to solve. And it's really excellent. It's not humorous. They're not bumbling. They're just underdogs. And I love it. So what can we take from that? I think just a love of underdogs, and that's something that, love it or hate it, that's something that D&D does pretty well. It does the zero to hero thing. It does that. It achieves that. You start as someone who might perish if anything hits them, and you end up a near demigod, right? And that can be fun. But I think we can even add more to it. I think we can, you know, that can be a premise of a campaign, is all of the worst adventurers being put in one group, right? And I think you'd have to phrase it a little carefully, but what if you said to the players, listen, your group, your gaming, you know, your delving group, your adventuring group, either all died or all got together and kicked you out for not being good enough. Right? So now you're with this other group. Now you're with the rejects. And the cool thing about that premise is every person in the group has this other group in their past where they, you know, someone, this group that they really love died and they feel responsible. Or we've got this shining, successful, high-statted group, that looks down its nose at all of you. And, you know, you've got some villains, you got some rivals going on in a way that could be really fun. So that could be neat. I just love the underdog story. And I think there's something to be taken from Slow Horses that we could dig into our sci-fi, fantasy, and horror settings. You know what? I don't know. I just think there's something there. And I'd love to hear more about how you're using underdogs in your game. And I'm going to think about that one some more. I might come back with some, we might revisit Slough House. And the reason why they're called Slow Horses is because the house where they all get sent is called Slough House. And so their nickname is the Slow Horses. Good stuff. And that's it for this episode. Let's get to the outro, shall we? Let's talk about how you can contact me and all that good fun stuff. Here we go. If you would like to support the show, first of all, you've done it. Thank you. Thank you for listening. You've gotten this far. I appreciate it. There are three other ways. They all begin with R. Reply, review, remunerate. You can reply to the show. You can send me an MP3. Send me an email. Let me know what's going on at your table. How are you using underdogs? How are you using questions to flesh out your setting? Or how are you fleshing out your setting and making things in motion through other methods? There are other methods. Clocks, I'm looking at you. But yes, there are other ways to show that your setting is in motion other than just questions. So I'd love to hear about it. You can do that in the notes is a link to my Mastodon account, and you can also email me at judd.karlman@gmail.com. I'm going to say that again in case you just got your pen. judd.karlman@gmail.com. Send me an email. Tell me what you're thinking. How do you use underdogs? How do you flesh out your setting and make it in motion? I would love to hear about it. You can review, drop a review in iTunes or in your app of choice. How do you play the podcast? Find that app, find an app that does reviews and drop a review. I would love some more reviews. That would be splendid. Or remuneration. You can absolutely, if money is a thing that you have and you can send it to me and that is not going to put you out, that's great. It's a great way to show that you are, you are valuing my time and I appreciate it. I appreciate all my paying patrons. Thank you very much. So that is episode 96. We're getting close. We're getting close to 100. It's an interesting time. All right. I hope your holiday seasons are going well and I will talk to you soon.